go into some maintenance and some deeper topics as well. So, and for those of you who weren't at the talk this morning, my name is Dan Fine. I am a developer advocate at Snowflake, but I exclusively focus on Apache Iceberg, so I'm glad to be here today to share Iceberg with the masses. Okay? So to kick things off, what is Iceberg? Why should you actually care? You've probably heard of Iceberg, right? It's making waves in the data engineering space. It is an open table format that was purpose-built to handle large-scale data sets in a data lake. So when you think about how things were in the past, you know, we've got data lakes now, so storing a bunch of files in object storage, but in the past we had our wonderful monoliths, our data warehouses, right? So data lakes were kind of a response to a lot of the things that weren't quite going well with data warehouses, mostly just the increasing costs, having that monolith. But there were some good things about data warehouses that we did like. And so what Apache Iceberg is sort of an answer to the concerns of data lakes and the concerns of data warehouses. And we're combining the best things of both into a single construct, which is a data lakehouse. We're so clever with our naming, right? And so what it is, what Iceberg is it adds an extra layer of metadata on top of the files that we already want to be storing in our data lakes. And by doing so, it allows us to collect that data and organize it into more structured tables. So effectively, we're adding some more structure, that table construct, on top of a regular data lake, okay? So we get some benefits on that. I mean, it's one system we're building on top of our data lake, so we still get some of the benefits of it being a single source of truth, like we would with sort of a data warehouse. We get the cost effectiveness, in most cases, of object storage. And then we get the flexibility to use whatever format that we actually want for our data, but we get governance and additional structure on top because we're grouping into those tables. So this also means that you don't get the vendor lock-in that you would effectively get with a lot of data warehouses. You could take your Iceberg tables wherever you want and use whatever tools that you want that is actually right for the job that you need to do. So it's really the best of both worlds. So Iceberg isn't the only technology out there trying to unlock the power of a data lakehouse for you. You may have heard of Apache Hudi or Delta Lake, but we're going to be focusing on Iceberg for this talk and some of the cool things that you can get and the benefits of Iceberg. And we're going to go more into these features as we go through more of this talk, but I wanted to give you a taste of some of what you can expect as we go through this. Okay? So for now, we're going to focus on the tip of the Iceberg, the basics. Thank you for the two people that snickered a little bit on that one. So the tip of the Iceberg, sort of the very basics that you need to know about Iceberg as a whole. And so for those of you who were here this morning, you got that crash course on the architecture. We're going to take it a little slower this time and actually take a look at what actually makes up Iceberg as a whole. So as I said, Iceberg is effectively just a layer of metadata on top of the files that we want to be storing in our data lake anyway. So we have some data files, and what we're going to do is we are going to track them with metadata. So we are going to work from right to left here. So first up, we have our manifest files. So manifest files are going to point to the data files and also, as we see, delete files for telling us how to ignore certain rows in our table. And more importantly, the manifest files are going to help keep track of some statistics about the data files that they're tracking. And an important thing to note here is that a manifest file is only going to keep track of a subset of the data files, right? So there's going to be a number of manifest files for a given data set, and they're each going to keep track of a certain number of the data files. And so by doing this, by having these statistics on top of the columns that we're storing in our data files, you're able to, later on, during query planning, effectively prune off data that's not relevant, right? We're keeping track of the max and mins, the bounds of the data that each files actually contain, so we can be a little more efficient with our query later on. Next up, we have a manifest list. It is exactly what it sounds like, a list of manifest files. But it's a little more coordinated than that. Each manifest list is going to list out the manifest files that belong to a specific time snapshot of the table at a given point in time.
Right? Yeah. Can I look at your device for a second?
It's not working.
Think
none of the microphones are working today, so this is not a surprise to me.
We're turning it off? Okay. Okay. No idea what just happened, but Hopefully it's good. All right, and then from there, we have metadata files. So the metadata files are going to track the snapshots, which then point to their associated manifest files. So we'll be keeping track of multiple snapshots of this table as it evolves over time. And then we're also going to keep track of some non-data information here, like the partitioning scheme that we're using, the actual schema of the data that we're storing as well. Okay. But that's not all. So that's the entire metadata layer and how it interacts with the data layer. But there's one more key component that's needed to make this a little more database-esque, and that's the catalog. So the catalog here is going to keep track of the individual tables that we are storing. Specifically, they're going to maintain a reference to, for that given table, where is the latest metadata file that we need to be aware of? Where does it exist so that we can then access it later on? And the catalog is also going to coordinate updating that pointer to a new metadata file every time we want to evolve the table at, and add more data to it. Okay? So speaking of catalogs, it's pretty important. Okay? It might sound like an easy component to add on there, but it really is worth thinking more about Iceberg catalogs as a whole. So they're keeping track of, again, that most recent metadata pointer. But they serve a purpose beyond that. So at the most basic level, they're there to make sure that we can find and interact with all the Iceberg tables that we're storing. And more importantly, ensures the consistency with the multiple engines that might be trying to work with those Iceberg tables at the same time. Okay? And they do that with atomic operations to actually update that metadata pointer every time we want to update the tables. So it's simple, but they're incredibly important to make sure that our tables are updating in the right way and functioning properly over time. And an important thing to note here is that the Iceberg project doesn't actually ship with an implementation of a catalog. That might sound problematic, but they do provide an interface, thankfully. Okay, so along with several implementations of clients that can talk to catalogs like Hive, JDBC, and more. So that's why you'll see a number of options out there, some of which are listed on the right, of different catalog implementations. So as per the interface, the only real requirement of an Iceberg catalog is that, as we already discussed, it provides a way for you to give back that current metadata file so we know where that is, and then provide a means for us to interact with the tables, like listing them out, creating them, dropping them, and more. And I don't know if are we taking questions in the middle or at the end? Does it matter? Up to me. What is your question, sir?
Previous slide, all the other objects were like files, whereas the catalog is a software component, right?
Yes, that would be a service. Oh, I'm sorry. The question was on this slide here. All of these, the components on the right, and the metadata and the data, those indeed are files. And the catalog is an application, a separate application.
And would it be okay to summarize the function of the catalog as basically be a kind of database for your metadata files?
It is not storing any of these metadata files effectively. It is providing pointers to those files. Yes. All right. So back where we were on catalogs, they are a necessary part of Iceberg as a whole, but Iceberg doesn't ship with one, so that might sound a little problematic. But you might want to choose one of the other catalogs out there. And how do you choose? That is a great question. As with most problems in life and software, it depends. But I've conveniently put together a couple questions to ask yourself so that you can help narrow down which catalog to actually choose. So the biggest consideration, biggest question that you should ask yourself is, how lazy are you feeling? And by that, I mean, do you want to commit to running a catalog that requires additional software or external resources? Or if it does require external services, is there a managed version, right? So how involved do you want to be in actually operating this catalog in the long term? The next question is, speaking of other software, the next thing you should consider is, how are the catalogs integrating with other tooling that you want to be using, other environments, compute engines that we'll get into shortly. Using certain catalogs can corner you into using certain cloud environments, for example, or compute engines. So you might want to consider that when you're choosing one. The next question to consider is, does it handle the basics? Hopefully your answer is yes. Does it do the thing that you want it to do? This might come as a surprise to some of you, but those atomic transactions that we like about Iceberg aren't a given for each of the catalogs. Some catalogs don't handle multi-table statements very well, or multi-statement transactions. And finally, where are you running this? Meaning, is this a toy use case, something you're playing around with, or do you want to actually ship this out to production? Some catalogs, due to the aforementioned limitations, aren't really recommended for production use, or they come with a big asterisk with that. All right. So now that we've seen at a high level what the key components of Iceberg are, our metadata and our catalog, the next thing we could focus on is how to actually work with our data. And we're going to do that with some sort of query engine. So conveniently, the Apache Iceberg project maintains some implementation of open source compute engines with built-in support for Apache Flink, Apache Spark. Both are great options out of the box if you just want to hit the ground running with Iceberg. But what you choose would ultimately depend on what your tech stack currently looks like, what your familiarity with either of these technologies actually is. But as we'll see later, there's a lot of really great features, especially with Spark, with the Iceberg actions that are built in there. Beyond that, the Iceberg system ecosystem is very healthy. There's a number of other query engines and tools available to you to actually interact with your Iceberg tables. This is not an exhaustive list, and it's ever growing. All right. So that's sort of the basics of setting the stage for Iceberg. But you might want to actually get started with it, and you do so by using queries. Okay, it's as simple as writing a query to actually interact with your Iceberg tables. And for a motivating example, because we all love those, we're going to say that we're keeping track of data related to Arctic cruise bookings. Isn't that fun? See, that's so fun. So our create table statement would look like this, and it's going to feel very familiar, right? It's a SQL. And note that we're going to be using the syntax for the Spark SQL that ships with Iceberg. So we'll keep tabs on, here's some standard information for our Arctic cruise booking, the booking ID, passenger, how much it actually cost, and the timestamp at which we're creating this booking. And an interesting thing to call out here is that the partitioning statement at the end of the statement here, you might recall from earlier that I mentioned hidden partitioning as a cool feature of Iceberg. So what this means is that Iceberg can use a transformation on top of an existing column as the partitioning field. So you'll see here we are extracting the hour of that booking timestamp, and we're going to partition the data based on that. And this is going to come in handy later when we talk a little bit more about selecting the data. Okay. So if we have a table, we should then insert some information. And again, this is sort of a standard insert statement. And then finally, when we're going to want to go and select information from that Iceberg table, we're going to make things a little interesting, and we're going to filter by a two-week period. We want all of the results, all the rows from that two-week period. But you notice here that we're filtering by days, okay, on that booking timestamp. And so the cool thing about partitioning in Iceberg is that because we are partitioning by a transformation on that booking timestamp, and we're partitioning by that, when we actually want to go and select that data later on, we can take advantage of that partitioning because it is a transformation on top of an existing field. We're not creating a separate field, and the compute engines know to make that transformation when you're applying any filtering on top of that timestamp. Right? So you can take advantage of that. So that was the very basic of Iceberg. All right? You can leave now if you want, but I hope you stay, because I want to go a little bit beneath the surface and scratch that itch, right? See how these things actually work, how these queries are operating when it comes to under the hood with some of the files that we saw earlier. So when we look at our create table query, so for this example, we're going to imagine that we have a fresh instance. We have no other files hanging out. And no other data files. So when we issue that create table statement, there's nothing here, right? We just have our running catalog instance, and we're running some engine of our choice. In this case, we say it's Spark SQL. So when we issue the create table statement to the engine, we're going to first parse that query, obviously. And next, the engine is going to reach out to the catalog to fetch the metadata for that table. That table doesn't exist, right? So we're not going to actually get any files here, any pointer. And now we can start to actually go through and create that first metadata file related to that table. And remember, the metadata file keeps track of the partitioning spec that we're actually using, the schema that we're specifying based on those columns in that create table query. And we're going to store that information in the metadata file. We're also going to create a unique identifier for the table. So now we have a metadata file. We have no additional data files, right? We haven't actually added anything to the table. So we have no manifest file or manifest list to actually track those data files. We just have our metadata file here. Okay? And then finally, the most important step is to update that pointer. So we have created this table, and so we want to reflect that in our catalog. So for our bookings table, we're pointing to our metadata file. Cool. So when we go ahead and add data for an insert, we're picking back up where we left off. We have this table already created in that reference in the catalog. So we are going to submit the query to actually add the data to the table. First step, we reach out to the catalog, find the latest, where this file actually exists, the metadata file. And then with the location of that file in hand, the engine can go ahead and read the metadata file. And I know what you're thinking here is that we are adding data files, right? Why do we have to think about the metadata file that currently exists? Well, we want to be able to keep track of what this schema is based on that create table statement and make sure that if we're changing that, we can evolve it properly over time and also see what that partitioning spec is for that existing table. So we do want to make sure we read the metadata file to get that information. Okay. And then from there, we can go ahead and write our data files. So this will be written as Parquet by default, although you have flexibility to change that. And this writing will be done according to the hourly partition spec. Right. So if we were inserting a number of rows across a number of timestamps, we would be breaking it up into those partitions and writing them to separate data files. Okay. At this point, we could also define a local sort on top of the file that we want to, the data that we want to be writing as well. All right. From there, we are going to work backwards and create that manifest file to track the new data file that we created. And at this point, if we are only adding one row here, but if we were adding many, many rows, we would also compute the statistics on top of the columns that we have inserted. So we have the max and min, the bounds of all those columns, and we'd be storing that in the manifest file. And of course, working backwards again, we have our manifest list that then just points to this one manifest file, and we roll up those statistics into the manifest list as well. And they also keep track of more statistics on how many rows were added or removed during this operation as well. Okay. And then from there, we're not going to touch the metadata file that already exists, but now we're going to create a new metadata file that has the same information as the partition spec, our schema as well.